Blog Talk Radio.
The year, 1888. The place, London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Saturday night, I think. Yes, it's Saturday night, and this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and I can't help it. Every time I hear my self-promotion on that Mad Hatter book, which is done by my friend Chris Dunham, I laugh because I wrote the book. It was a fun book to write, and when I hear him say, has the Hatter gone mad, I want to say, of course he has. But you'll have to read the book to find out why he went mad. Of course he's mad, because Hatters went mad, just what they did. I'm going to tell you, I am so excited. Today I did something I didn't think I was going to be able to do, and it just made my entire day. June 1st through the 4th, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the Cocoa Beach, Orlando, Daytona Beach area, come out to the International Palms, because we are doing a huge event. It's Space Coast Book Lovers. You can find them on Facebook. And on that weekend, it starts on Thursday. We'll be there through the entire weekend. There's 70-plus authors, and we're going to be signing books. And I was afraid I wasn't going to get to participate. And this is the first live event I've been able to do in 3 years, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so, so excited. So come out and support us, and buy lots of books, because you're going to have authors from all over the country. In fact, we have a waiting list of people that wanted to come and bring their books, but we ran out of space. So join us. I'm telling you, you won't regret it, and yours truly will be there. And I might even try to do a live remote. We'll see how that goes. This morning when I ran my numbers, and I'm sure that my guest tonight is going to be so, so excited, just on Blog Talk Radio alone, ladies and gentlemen, we are at 5,303 listeners. That's just on this show. Doesn't count all the podcasts that I put the shows up on. When you count all the podcasts that the shows are up on, we're at 12,482 listeners. That's in a show that has only been live since July the 27th of last year, not even a year yet. And we are exploding. We are listened to in 50-plus countries. Some of them I've never even heard of. Some of them I think are just a little dot on the map, an island out in the middle of nowhere, and maybe all they have to do is the Internet. But it doesn't matter, because we are entertaining them, and they can order your books, your art, your music, your business. They can do it online. So if you want to come on this show, please. I'm still taking people. I'm already booked up almost through August, so don't let the year get away. Contact me at offthechainradio@yahoo.com and say, Yvonne, I want to come on your show. I don't care if you just have a platform. You know, I'll talk to you. I'll talk politics. I'll talk religion. I'll talk just about anything. If it's not illegal, immoral, or unjust, I'll talk and I'll debate it. We'll discuss it. Also, I love promoting my author friends, because we as indie authors have a hard enough time getting our work out there, because the Big Six doesn't like us. And when we tell people we're an indie author, they go, oh, you're that bunch that self-published. Your books aren't worth anything. Well, no, that's a wrong assumption, very wrong assumption. We have some of the most fantastic authors out there, as indie authors you will have ever read in your life. And if you have closed your mind to indie authors, ladies and gentlemen, you are missing the boat. I'm telling you, we have some of the best, most creative, off the wall, over the top, through the window, out the door authors you have ever, ever read. And on that note, one of those authors is a returning guest. He's become a regular on the show, because this man cranks out books faster than Carter cranks out little liver pills. Author Gary Starter is with us again tonight, and he is a former journalist who studied English and journalism at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. His love for science fiction compelled him to write his first novel, What Are You Made Of?, which was published in 2006. His inspiration is Isaac Asimov. The science fiction novel focuses on intelligent artificial life and whether sentient and androids, I cannot talk tonight, should possess the same rights as humans. And he and I have discussed that. We discussed that in the first show. It was a very interesting discussion. The androids in Starter's novel are created as hybrids. They're part machine and part human. And that further blurs the line between human and machine. Starter foresees a near future where humans will be forced to decide if intelligent machinery is indeed a life form. Possibly in this near future, some humans will possess computer enhancements to overcome disabilities, becoming hybrid themselves. And ladies and gentlemen, that is already happening. So the line between biological life form and mechanical life form continues to be examined in his 2010 Gods of the Machines. That's not all this young man has done. He has written several books, two as a matter of fact. One of them is called Murder by Association, and the other one is called Kindred Killers. Now, I am in the middle of reading Murder by Association, and I have to tell you, I can't put it down. I catch myself going to sleep and then waking up and kicking myself because I've fallen asleep reading this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful book, which we'll get into in a little bit. But first, let's say hello to our guest. Hello, Gary. How are you, my friend?
Hey, good evening. Thanks for having me again. And that was an inspiring introduction, too, especially with the indie authors because, you know, that's where I'm at. So I appreciate that little shout-out for us.
Well,
because, you know, people think, you know, maybe it's not done up to the production level of the so-called professional big six, as you call them. But, you know, especially for this book I'm going to be talking about tonight, I partnered up with an editor, and we are making sure to the very inch of this book's life, the editing is going to be stellar along with the writing. So I just hope everybody will not, you know, be discouraged and say, oh, it's an indie author, like you said. So give everybody a chance.
Well, I tell you what, Gary, I have found that, and I've been in this business a long time, and I am finding that more and more young authors are going the indie route. In fact, a few of the, what we call out of the big six, count themselves as indie. Case in point, James Patterson. James Patterson tells his publishing company what he's writing, how he's writing it, who he's writing it with, and he picks his covers. That is unheard of in the traditional publishing companies and arena, because once you turn that book over, you lose that book completely. Yeah, you get the royalties off of it, and you've copyrighted it. But they can rewrite the book. They can put the cover on if they want. They can rip it apart if they want to.
Yeah, well, that sounds very scary to an author.
Yeah, especially
you know,
when
speaking about this, and I had to come a little bit to terms with that issue about this very book because, like I said, this is sort of my first kind of like, let's say, live interaction I've ever had with a book. Before, I usually just write the books out and then I go to my publisher or have some edit it after the fact. This book was basically being edited and worked on as it was going. I was getting interaction from my partner working with Robin Firestone. She was reading it and then she would say something, why are you having that character kind of act like that? That seems kind of, you know, odd or mysterious. And then her comments kind of propelled me to take whatever that was to the next level, which I probably wouldn't have had without that, you know, interactive experience.
True.
So it was a little bit threatening to have someone come along and start, you know, everything, doing some changes or whatever, and editing right while you're doing it. You know, you want your author control, as you're saying. But I see, I think I've grown a bit doing this book in this way, too, for the better. So I'm really excited that this is a collaboration.
Even though she is asking you those questions, she's not taking the book and ripping it apart and rewriting it. And this is what happens in a traditional house. The author sends the book up. The book has already been through several proof. I can't talk tonight, so please forgive me. It's one of those nights. The book has been through several edits and several proofreads and several beta readers before it even goes to the publishing house. And then once their editor gets a hold of it, he or she will completely rewrite it because most of them are frustrated writers anyway. By the time, let's just say James Patterson's book gets up there, he didn't know what the hell it's going to say. Time he gets it back, it's been completely rewritten. And to me, that's wrong because that in essence says, well, your writing is a joke, and it isn't.
Right.
Our writing is not a joke. And what your editor is doing is she's making you think about things, which is a good thing. Because we get so deep in the weeds, we don't see the big picture.
Right. And she's helped me, you know, see my characters that I've written, like, you know, and sort of like a template when she was looking at it. And, you know, they got kind of expanded thanks to her. And I'm really... You know, other than this, just a murder mystery book, which a lot of people out there love, and a thriller, I see this book very character-oriented. It involves Stanford Carter, who you mentioned that you were reading in the Murder by Association novel. That's basically the first book of the series. And his partner, Jill Seacrest, who is a forensic expert. And if you read that book and then read to this one, you'll see growth. Like, it's been a few years. They're married now. And they get an offer to go to the FBI in New York. So things are definitely changing and slowing around. I wanted the characters to be dealing with that change as much as the plot going on. I want the reader to see so much in the characters and really get to feel they know them in this book. And they also have a third character coming in, a new character who's a new FBI partner into the mix. And she's pretty fiery herself. So I've had between these three characters, like... I don't know if you call it a triumvirate, or if you will. It's I think they play off each other, and I think they would think about the case and everything a little bit differently in their own way to work in a collaboration, yet they're very individual. So I'm hoping that's going to be interesting to the readers as well. But really excited that you know, these characters have grown with me as you're doing it. I'm sure you know you've written books, and I don't know if your characters stay with you in your mind like me, but I find that exciting.
Oh, yeah. All the time my characters stay. Even after I'm through the book, they come back and haunt me because some of them niggle at the back of my mind and say, I won't back out for a little while. Can you do another book? And I'm going, not right now. I'm busy. But I have taken characters. I took characters from The Pink Canary and put them in one of the When Fates Collide books. It was When Fates Collide Arm Candy. I brought three or four of the characters out of my Pink Canary, which was a completely it was a complete standalone book. Had nothing to do with
When
Fates Collide. It had nothing at all to do with When Fates Collide. But I just brought them into the mix because they fit.
Well, I mean, I've kind of done the same thing, too, with this Stanford Carter character. He's not only appearing in these books, but if anybody actually reads the Caitlin Diggs series, which is a paranormal sci-fi investigative series, Stanford Carter is Caitlin Diggs' friend, and he always appears in her books. Now, her books are science fiction, but he's not science fiction. His books are just murder mysteries. So I kind of have them visit each other, even though their genres kind of clash a bit. And I like to do that too. So I can see, you know, how you were excited to bring those characters in, maybe to meet some other characters. I kind of like that crossover idea. I think that's pretty cool.
And what it does is it gets the reader interested in, if they're not a, say, a sci-fi reader, you bring Caitlin over into the murder mysteries, and all of a sudden they're wanting to know more about her, so they'll go back and read the Caitlin series just to find out who Stanford Carter is and how he came to be where he is now.
Yeah, so basically if you look at it that way, then Stanford Carter, well, you know, this will be the third book he's in, you know, for his own series, but he's also appearing in four of the Caitlin Diggs books, so I guess he's traveled more.
He's traveled
than I realized.
A bit. And yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, before we went live, I was talking to Gary, and when I read, I see these people in my head. They may not be as anyone else sees them, but it's my my head in my movie, so I see these characters. And I see Stanford Carter because he is such a straight-laced guy. I mean, this guy, he is so by the book you want to throw up. You just want to kill him because he misses all kinds of clues, and he's a detective. But the devil is in the details, but he's so focused on being in the straight and narrow that he sometimes misses the little details. But I see him as a tall guy, thin guy, kind of, and don't get offended, people, but nerdy IT guy with the glasses and the tweed jacket with the things on the elbows, the patches on the elbows, and he becomes so focused in what he's doing that he misses the entire forest because he's seeing that tree down at the end of the line, and he's going to get to that tree. He doesn't care what else gets in his way or what he has to fall over, which is a clue, because he sees the tree.
That's interesting the way you see it, and I love that because, you know, if the reader comes along, they can see the character, you know, in their own version. And that's interesting that you said that because, I mean, some of it I wouldn't even thought of, you know, what you're saying. But in this book, The Killing Collective, which is the third book, I'm going to have him kind of deal with sort of his, like, lack of people skills, you say, or, you know, and his partner and now his wife, Jill Secrets, is sort of kind of going to, like, figuratively and literally bat him over the head to see
he has
the
no
life war, which is kind of ironic. It's ironic because he's considering himself, you know, very like a student of Zen and metaphysical thoughts. And, you know, he's trying to keep him centered and focused so he doesn't go off the rails when he's dealing with these crimes. But sometimes he's done that too much. He's compartmentalized inside himself so much that, like you say, he may be missing clues from people because of that. So he definitely needs Jill. And she, you know, needs him. And I really hope that when the people read this, they'll see them as a good team, even though they're kind of opposites, that they're a good team together.
And what he sometimes does, because he is so focused on getting to the end of the journey, he misreads not only clues but people. And he's a detective. Which makes it a beautiful story because it shows that he's flawed and we're all flawed. So it makes him human, but you still want to just reach through the book and bounce something off of his head and say, can you open your eyes, guy? Come on.
Yeah.
He's lovable, well, but you just want to knock him in the head.
Well, fortunately for him, he's going to be partnered up with a new partner in his new career with the FBI. He was formerly a homicide detective with the Boston PD, so now he's going to the FBI in New York City, and he'll have a new rookie partner, and she, you know, kind of goes by instinct and guts and maybe sees a lot more about people going on than Carter is, who's kind of, you know, steeping himself in whatever the facts and just very analytical. And you know, even though she's a rookie, this new character, she's seeing like a pretty good picture, reading people pretty well. I named her Shania Deep Rose. She's from Alabama. She's former military, and she's coming to the FBI as a rookie. And I think she has kind of a lot to say. I think her characterization might be a little bit humorous to readers. She's definitely more flamboyant than Carter. So again, another opposite for Carla to deal with.
Well, you know, Gary, that if she's from Alabama, that if she's going to insult somebody, the true Southern,
right.
Southern saying is "bless your heart."
You've
got to put that in there somewhere, because if she's really from Alabama,
right.
She'll be saying "bless your heart" a lot.
Yeah, me and Robin were, you know, working with her dialect, and you know, we kind of have that Southern dialect going, like, you know, like say on the word thing, she's not pronouncing the, well, no, that's not a good example, but like say if she's going to say killing, she might say killing,
right.
You know, with just, you know, no G at the end. So that reflection is like right in her dialogue. Like we tailored her dialogue to hopefully seem very real for that Southern accent she's carrying.
Because if a Southerner like me reads it and it reads like she's from Massachusetts and you're telling me she's from Alabama, I'm say, oh, Gary, this won't work, honey. You've got to go back and rework this.
Yeah, that's Carter from Massachusetts. So, like, you know, he has that maybe proper dialogue. So he's, you know, he's out of fish out of water, too, along with Deep Rose, because they're both, you know, being transplanted. She's from the South. He's from Boston going into the Big Apple. And it's more intensified, you know, especially for both of them. You know, the city's more intensified than even Boston for Carter. So I want the characters, you know, to interact with the city. Maybe they have the city be like a flavor, a character in itself.
Ooh.
So, you know, with Robin's help, you know, because she is a former New Yorker, she painted a lot of real scenes, helped me paint a lot of real scenes, that actual places that, you know, the reader could actually go to if they were, you know, a tourist or something. So
perfect.
It's kind of like a little tour. It's kind of like a little tour of New York City along with the story, hopefully.
I can't wait for it to come out, because what you have done, ladies and gentlemen, what Gary has done is he just painted you a picture of this book, and he's made his characters believable from the places that they're from, the demographics of where they're from, their cultures. And he's also painted you a picture of New York, where they're totally out of their realm of comfort zone, because he drops them right down into New York, and you're going to get to read about the places that really happened. Gary, this is what makes a wonderful book. My husband and I talk about this all the time, because he's also an avid reader. And he says, Yvonne, y'all literally paint a picture. I can see the places in my mind, because I've been to some of those places, and I know exactly where they're talking about. That's what makes a book come alive. Would you agree with that? Did we lose you? Oh, hold on, ladies and gentlemen. We've lost Gary.
Can you hear me?
Did we lose you? Yes, we lost you, but that's okay.
Can you hear me
back
now?
I can hear
okay,
you
great.
Now.
Okay.
I don't know how much you heard before you dropped.
You said you and your husband are very avid readers.
And what you've done with this third book is you've literally not only grown your characters, which if someone is reading a series like that, they expect the characters to grow, because as human beings, that's what we do, where we stagnate and die. But you also are bringing this new environment to life, and people that have been in New York, or people that even haven't gone to New York but know of the different places, will feel like they're there. I can't wait.
All right. Well, that book, you know, is still in kind of like a post-production stage, too, with the last of the edits. So I'm hoping for at least, well, to be safe, maybe in the latter part of this month, but definitely by May. So, you know, if anybody, listeners, are, you know, kind of getting an interest that they want to check this out, you can always go to the two books, Murder by Association or Kindred Killers. I both have them kind of specially priced on Amazon right now. You can grab them for 99 cents, and you can get an idea of the characters in the meantime, or if you can just jump into this new one when it does come out. I wanted to write this, although it's a series, it's still a standalone book, that you won't be lost if you even want to come into this new book called The Killing Collective. There'll be plenty of description and background for the characters, so you can, you know, certainly just jump into this new book with no problem.
I am so excited because, like I said, this murder by association, if I had not disciplined myself today and gotten done the things that I needed to get done today, I would have done nothing but read that book, and then I wouldn't have had the show prepped, I wouldn't have had things done I needed to get done, and then we would have been sitting here going, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah, I'm glad. I mean, I was excited when I heard you say that, and when we emailed each other, that you just went ahead and looked into that. I appreciate that.
Oh,
honey, so now you know.
You got a reader for life here, I'm telling you, because the book is absolutely amazing. It grabs me, and if, like I said, if I wasn't so tired, I'd stay up all night reading because I really want to stay up all night reading. I want to know where these two people are going, and if Gary's going to get his self together and figure out that, not Gary, but Carter, if get his self together and figure out it's okay not to be so rigid.
I mean, he's going to learn that from his wife, basically. She's going to make him learn it, you know, as partners and wives do.
That is true.
With not really much of a kind hand.
I can't wait. So,
yeah.
Since we have already teased our audience enough, and since I'm sitting here salivating, waiting for the third book, and I haven't even finished the first book, go ahead and tease them some more, because I know that you're going to read a little tidbit. So, ladies and gentlemen, just sit tight. This book's not out yet, but you're going to hear it first here on this show. He is going to read however much he wants to read, so get your coffee cup, get your iced tea, get your Coca-Cola, whatever you're drinking, your adult beverage, put your feet up and listen to Gary as he reads some of the new book. Anytime you're ready, my friend.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is right. This is an exclusive, so it's very exciting. This is not, been outside, anywhere between me and Robin, so... I hope people like this. This first chapter sort of lends an insight into some of the plot. Just to set a little bit of the background, the FBI will discover that there's a rash of killings going on, and the assistant director, who'll be the boss of Stanford Carter, is sort of leaning to the notion that there's thrill killings going on, that they're sort of like all... killings that are not really strung together in any fashion or any like a logical sense, other than it might be thrill killings, but there may be something going on more than that idea. So this first chapter takes a look at a group that has been forming and sort of inviting some, say, disenfranchised people to it, sort of kind of like winning their support through their pain. So here it goes. I'm going to read chapter one. In the hushed blackness of an auditorium in a location known only to those invited there, a giant movie screen lowered from the ceiling to rest center stage. The audience held a collective breath with anxious anticipation. Without introduction, the screen abruptly blinked to life, revealing the 40-foot image of a handsome, charismatic gentleman of indeterminate age. He generated an electric presence so powerful it was awe-inspiring. Good evening, I am the Silver Man. The audience jumped to their feet and went wild. He waited at least 5 full minutes before he could continue. Welcome, all of you, to the Society of National Protectionists, a community of people who want to see a better, brighter future for America. Tonight's rally will focus on ways each one of you can and will build a better economy, the benefits of which you yourselves will experience. We are all here for the same reason. To explore why middle-class life is disappearing before our very eyes, why we are sliding inevitably down into the abyss of poverty, and what we can do to change it. today. Once known for the kind of spirit that created prosperity and growth at every corner of the world, the middle classes who work, study, and excel have seen hope turn to cynicism. Perseverance is no longer an option for those who find themselves unable to find a job, keep a job, or afford their own home. The will to march ahead has turned into the passive, habitual dreams of the past. For many of you, this is the end of the road. Allison Lightway turned to her neighbor and whispered, "Why is he called the Silver Man?" "Because he has to hide his identity. That's why he only appears on the screen. Shh. I'm going to ask you some questions now, and I want you to think very carefully about your answer to each one. How long has it been since you, A, left your home to do anything other than work and take care of the absolutely necessary tasks that allow you and your family to survive from day to day? B, gave up on your dream of a college education and got stuck in a dead-end, low-paying, no-benefit job? C, were able to do more than meet your monthly bills and minimums, if that? D, met someone new who would gladly share his last meal with you if you were in need? If your answer is too long or I can't remember, it's because our social, economic, and political systems are utterly broken and beyond repair. The ladder of opportunity has been split in two with the haves on top and the have-nots below. The backbone of our economy, the upper and lower middle classes, denied any chance to move up, have inevitably fallen down. And yet you, as responsible, caring, decent citizens, do the work and pay the taxes that allow the rich to get richer. Your tax dollars, private contributions and government funding provide rights, benefits, and services to the sick and disabled, the homeless, the unemployed, the poverty-stricken, illegal immigrants, foreigners, freeloaders, criminals, sexual deviants, non-whites, and non-Christians. I have news for all of you here tonight. You are now the poverty-stricken, the unemployed, the sick, and the homeless. But you keep treading water, water in which you will inevitably drown. The wrong people, wrong thinkers, and those who would destroy your community are standing on your shoulders and grabbing everything you work for and deserve for yourselves. The time has come for all of you to get up out of your easy chairs and turn off the TVs, computers, and video games that keep you opiated, ignorant, and resigned to your fate. Your constantly growing desire to experience the world from your living room is exactly what this government wants, because they know that your acceptance of virtual reality makes you lazy in mind and body. It blinds you to the power of actuality. Yes, I said, actuality. Actualizing means you don't have to accept your present condition as your lot in life. You can change it, but to break out of the inertia of a life isolationism and hopelessness in which you have immersed yourselves, you must be willing to leave your comfort zone, join our community of national protectionists, and throw away this broken system like so much garbage that you may build something better for yourselves. The hall erupted in applause once more. The stamping of hundreds of pairs of feet was like rolling thunder. Allison listened, wrapped in thought. She didn't know whether she wanted to cheer or sob, but one thing she knew for sure was that this man was speaking directly to her. The Silver Man pierced their ears and hijacked their minds as he wove his web of lies, urging them towards blame and hate. Retribution, he preached, was the most desirable and expedient way to eliminate the wrong thinkers and the wrong people. He went on to describe in great detail a new blueprint he designed himself to rebuild society that would work best for everyone. The plan was a mishmash of ideas stolen from madmen and ideologies that preyed on the weak and disadvantaged solely as a means to benefit the greedy and powerful few, or the one. It was the old bait and switch, divide and conquer. Give them a reason for their suffering, one they're willing to believe. Make sure they know it's not their fault. Give them a group of people to hate and blame. Then turn them loose to play jury and executioner. Some attendees, the new ones, listened in horror and got up to leave, never knowing the Silver Man's staff took down their names. They would be monitored from that moment on, just like all the rest. The ones who stayed were mostly like Allison. They thought of themselves as a friendless victim of society. The Silver Man produced a longing in Allison so great that she felt she would do anything he asked of her if only she could belong to this community. Allison had found religion and a new messiah to worship. I'll dedicate myself to this man in this community. I'll tear down what can't be fixed and build a perfect America according to his plan. She continued listening, allowing his words to seep into her consciousness. If we fail to hear the message, we will become extinct. Periods of upheaval and turmoil, even destruction, are sometimes required to bring down a Sodom and Gomorrah. If we are to build a Garden of Eden, we must know when to recognize evil and band together to destroy it. Just as we protect our homes from thieves, our women from rapists and murderers, and our country from terrorists, you will learn how to use the tools of protectionism to make America a paradise. I will show you how the helpless become powerful and the hopeless realize their dreams. You must all go right out into the streets to protect what is yours, and I will tell you how. Jeannie, a casual acquaintance who could barely tolerate Allison, sat listening with clamped lips. She'd driven us, Allison, all the way to New York City from Sayreville, New Jersey for this crap, and she was not pleased. Her eyes remained squinted throughout the entire speech as if she was trying to determine if the Silverman really believed what he was saying to them. We will meet again and again as a social unit and to share thoughts and ideas until we are ready to begin our task. Each and every one of you will have your own chance to participate in this miraculous creation. You'll be able to use the mental tools you will employ to make it happen. I promise you, all of you will experience an intensity of friendship and camaraderie you've never known. I welcome you, therefore, into the ever-growing fold of the National Society of Protectionists. A ton of silver glitter rained down in a mob almost out of control, shouting as one and saluting as one. Again, the silver man waited patiently, like an indulgent father, for the crowd to quiet down. Each of you will receive an invitation by email to our next meeting. You will receive the address to a brand new location where you will meet even more people than you have tonight. The information shared in these rallies are yours and are not to be shared outside of your family and home. And now, I'd like to invite all of you to leave your seats to spend the next hour getting to know each other amid soft music, wonderful finger food, and the finest champagne and Vichy water. The protectionists offer you tonight a unique once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to discover the warmth and security of a strong community that cares about your welfare and happiness. Your first task in this incredible journey is to leave your comfort zone for the social pleasures of center stage. Until we meet again, I thank you all for being here with me tonight. He nodded his head humbly as the room exploded in a chimera of hope and alliance. At the very height of the frenzy, the screen blinked off and the silver man was gone, leaving the crowd starving for more. Jeannie and Allison left their seats and wandered down to the stage to meet some of the others and sample the hors d'oeuvres and drinks being passed around by waiters dressed in bright red jackets with gold braiding. Smooth jazz floated through the air, and the lights dimmed just enough to create an atmosphere of intimacy and warmth. Jeannie laughed out loud. What a load of horseshit, Allie. Can you believe that nut job and what's up with the Incognito Act? I have the plan that will make you solvent, and all you have to do is eliminate the competition? Embrace the community? Oh, please. I think he discussed a lot of very interesting ideas. I like what he had to say. Don't you think it's about time we stood up for our own kind and put an end to a system that keeps us behind the eight ball? If the system is made of people, then it's high time we had a chance to design one. The wrong thinkers and the wrong people have everything, Jeannie. It's not fair. Why not take the chance to build something better if we can? Why not let people know they've done eating our slice of the American pie? Oh, Allie, get real. You can't change corrupted systems of government and economy as if you were rebooting a computer. You can't literally tear down a society and rebuild it the way you want it. There's a name for people like that, anarchists. And they put you in jail for that, Allie, and throw away the key. A staff member approached them just then. Good evening, ladies. You are Allison Whiteley, I believe. I am Peter, one of Silverman's assistants. If you continue with me, his executive staff would like to take a few moments and introduce themselves to you and to get to know you a little so they can accurately convey your thoughts to him. Allison was flattered. She was thrilled. But what about my friend? The handsome young assistant had a ready answer. Unfortunately, there's not enough time to meet everyone personally this evening. The Silverman can see his audiences on his monitors from where he broadcasts. He noticed your enthusiasm while he was speaking and specifically asked that we hear more about what you brought here tonight. Shall we go? Allison looked at Jeannie. Sorry, Jeannie, don't leave. Remember, you're taking me home. I'll only be a few minutes. A scant 15 minutes later, Allison was back and looking for Jeannie. She picked up another glass of champagne, bursting with excitement. That was wild. Everyone was so nice to me. They wanted to know all about me and how I felt and what I thought about. The private office was beautiful, all decked out in red and gold. I think the gold leaf on the walls was real. We talked about the Silverman's dreams and plans and had some more of that great champagne. There were petite fours and cappuccino, and we just had a wonderful time, Jeannie. If you didn't meet the silver-haired, blue-eyed mystery man himself, then who did you talk to back there? I met his executive assistant. Her name is Galatea. Isn't that a pretty name? She had to remain hidden as well. Everyone who becomes part of the executive community is in danger, so even she wears a disguise. Really, what kind of disguise? She wore a mask of a woman, a beautiful woman with alabaster skin. It looked like the face of a statue, you know? It was carved out of stone or something. She was dressed in a full-length black Chanel gown with a back that plunged all the way down to there. She didn't talk at all. I think maybe she had a cold or something. Another assistant asked the questions and answered mine, but she sat on the seat for me and listened to the whole thing. I tell you, it was the single best experience of my life, entire life, Jeannie. You want to murder him, don't you? I also looked around to see who spoke. Who said that? Who said what? Didn't you hear that? Allison, give me that glass. You had enough to drink. You're hearing things. Let's get out of here. This place gives me the creeps. She walked away to find their coats, muttered Martin Kemp about Anarchy, Silverman, and the Masked Women with No Voices. As she waited for Jeannie to return, the room seemed to get smaller. The music faded away, and the voice she heard a moment ago spoke once more, only the voice she realized did not belong to a person. It was in her head. For some reason, she wasn't very concerned about it. She was used to talking to herself and figured she just had too much champagne. The voice repeated its question. You want to murder him, don't you? Allison felt a little faint. A choir sang to her. It was beautiful, the most beautiful song she ever heard. A second later, her brain flooded with a mixture of endorphins and something else, something that made her feel very good and very mean all at once. Neurons fired in her brain as synapses allowed new thoughts to break it, travel at breakneck speed and connect to larger ones. The song seemed very important, but she had to pay close attention to hear the words that would become the action contained in the last chapter of her life. You are with the community. You have promised to protect it. You know a man who wants to prevent you from finding friendship and acceptance. He wants you to die in poverty so he might prosper. David Florio will kill you unless you kill him first. You hate him, Allison, and you want to murder him with your bare hands. We will come to you in your dreams tonight so you may know exactly how to commit the sublime act of allegiance. You will contact this man by tomorrow afternoon and make a date for the same evening at his apartment. You'll come straight home when your job is completed, and you will not remember anything. You will not remember anything. You will not remember. Jeannie snapped her fingers. Allison, Allison, anybody home? Come on, snap out of it, stupid. Allison blinked her eyes. I thought you were getting the coats. Jeannie rolled her eyes. I told you all that drinking and drugging was going to rot your brain if you ever had one to begin with. Let's go. We wasted enough time here. Jeannie drove Allison home. During the ride, Allison looked out the window at the night. Allison felt wretched and alone riding back to New Jersey with the young woman who treated her so badly. No one likes me, and I try so hard. I'm not letting go of the community now that I found it. I don't care what she thinks. Jeannie snorted derisively. You look like I just shot your dog or something, Allie. Jesus Christ, the man's trying to start a goddamn revolution. How can you possibly take him seriously? He's deranged, Allison. I worry about you. This is just the kind of thing that would happen to you. Don't you realize how needy you are? It's sad, Allie, sad. You drive people away by begging and pleading for their approval. You agree with anything everyone says just to please them. You have no mind of your own. I'm telling you now, do not allow yourself to be led by that silly man and that bunch of brainless morons at the rally. Didn't you notice people leaving while he spoke? Didn't you notice disgust on their faces? Honestly, if you hadn't been hanging on his every word as if you were receiving an epiphany, I would have left too. Allison kept her head turned to the window. She didn't answer. There was nothing to say. Why do I let her bully me? She walks all over me and I just let her do it. I know people don't like me, but I don't know why. I try so hard and I'm a good person. The people at the rally like me tonight. I like them and they like me. She's wrong. There are people who like me. I just never met them tonight. The old Allison Whiteway was suddenly gone. In her place was a woman baptized with venom and seduced by acceptance. It was as though she slipped through a tiny crack in a wall and discovered all the secrets of the universe on the other side, previously hidden from her sight. She turned her head to the woman who was quickly passing out of her heart and spoke as one already converted. I am absolutely not going to argue with you about this, Jeannie. The only concept is too big and your brain is too small. We have a chance to make our country a better place and to live better lives. The Silver Man has a concrete plan on how we can do it. I'm standing on the brink of change, Jeannie, and with or without you, I'm jumping. And that is the end of Chapter 1, The Killing Collective.
Wow. Just wow. You said you read more in that first chapter. You built the storyline and the anticipation in that first chapter. Is it done yet? Is it on the market yet? I'm ready for it. I mean, that is the feeling that I got when you were reading that. And I'm seeing these two women in this huge auditorium and this one woman being brainwashed. And I can't wait, Gary. This is magnificent.
Yeah, and this is what is kind of like creeping around, basically. As you can see, it's moving from place to place, so the locations are not found. They seem to have maybe somewhat good intentions for the people going there, you know, broken people like Allison. But as Jeannie, her friend, can see, they possibly have other motives that Allison can't see, and that's going to be kind of like the crux of the story. What
I'm thinking
the secret
Jim
group
Jones.
Is doing. Right.
I'm thinking Jim Jones and the Kool-Aid cocktail, and they drank it without any qualms at all. Just, okay, he said we're going to a better place. Down the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And it's mind control that this guy is doing with mind control, and also probably something in some of the stuff he gave him to drink in the little inner sanctum.
Oh, I'm glad you saw that. Yeah, exactly. So when she comes out, as you can see, she's hearing some voices in her head. I mean, other than Jeannie, who doesn't really even consider even like a friend, basically just like kind of a desperate acquaintance, maybe. You know, she's inside her head a lot, so Allison doesn't even realize sort of what's going on. She's kind of perfect prey for this type of group. So the real mystery is, what is this group up to? By the time Stanford Carter is assigned to the case, his assistant director is looking at it mostly as kind of like these crazy killings that are going on. Allison has been sort of brainwashed, as you say, to go murder this guy called David Florio. What is the real reason behind that? Carter will have to, and his team will have to, you know, figure that out as the story goes. And they'll have to, kind of like try to track down these people who are kind of like, you know, jumping around and, they're in the night, in the darkness, kind of like rodents, scurrying here and there.
Well, what is interesting?
Kind of like,
What is extremely interesting, Gary, is this sort of thing goes on all the time. These extreme groups, if you will, that's who they prey on. They prey on the people that have low self-esteem, the people that can be manipulated, and they do literally get in their heads and brainwash them into their line of thinking because they make it sound so attractive, just like your Silverman did. He made it sound so attractive that they just fall right into that pit.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the kind of mystery of the book, like what's the Silverman's real goal, and you know, is any of his intentions actually maybe beneficial, at least maybe in his line of thinking? What real group is he connected to? We will learn more as the book goes on that there's actually been a group of scientists, and this is basically for real, that there's a group called the Jasons who were started in the 60s, mainly a group of scientists who were to work on plans with the defense agencies to see what technologies and so forth would come about in the future and their impact on the society and how best they could protect the country while doing these new introducing these new technologies. So this will be part of, I hope, for the intrigue of the book of just, you know, what this Jason's Groups is, what I foresee this Jason's Groups would really be, you know, what their real intentions would be. Of course, like, no one will be able to really go see what they are. They remained a hidden group, sort of an offshoot. And if anybody's fascinated about that idea, you can go kind of Google that one and look up the word Jasons, and you'll see that they were actually a kind of like a secret group, sort of like would vote on issues like new technologies and new forms of defense. So so Carter is, coming up, he's moved to New York, and his first case is going to be a doozy pretty much for him. It's not going to be just a simple murder mystery. It's not going to be just a simple, husband kills wife deal. It's going to be many layers to the thread, and he's going to have to come up with, all his wits and all his experiences to even stay in the game with these people. They're sort of really out of his league, and, they've been used to pulling strings over the years with no not even have to answer to anybody, these type of people out there. So, how will Carter deal with them? How will he, work with Jill and his new partner? These are all questions I hope the reader will be intrigued by.
And you're right when you said that this series could continue, because just with that group alone, you could do 2 or 3 books. As that group evolves and as technology evolves, I mean, just... Ladies and gentlemen, go back and listen to the other shows that I did with Gary, because we always get in these very, very interesting conversations. We've talked about the pyramids. We've talked about outer space. Now we don't even have time to talk about the Jason's group. So when I bring you back in September, and you're going to come back in September if you will, we'll talk
okay.
about the Jason's group and how it
yeah.
brought about this book, because that helps give people that interest. And I got to go read this book now.
Yeah, and by that time, hopefully I'll even have another one ready to go out. There'll be a science fiction book called Good Alien Gone Bad, so we can start to talk about that one, too, at that time. Maybe that one will be out, too.
This is so much fun. I'm having so much fun tonight. I'm telling you, I've learned a lot, because as soon as you started the book, you had me at the first sentence. Because this movie is dancing around in my head, and I'm seeing this auditorium filled to the brim with people waiting excitingly for this thing to come up and this guy to come on and him to expand all of this knowledge, and he's given them all this stuff that they've thought but not said out loud, and he's reiterating that they're the downtrodden, and he's going to help them. And I'm thinking, where's he going with this? And it's the manipulation. It's the total. And that's what Carter's going to have to figure out, is how do you get around the manipulation?
Right. And, you know, why, you know, what's the purpose of this brainwashing? And these seem like senseless acts of murder that will be happening. How will the team deal with them? Especially the rookie, Deep Rose. How's she going to deal with it? She'll be presented a chance where she might go a bit more hands-on into the situation. And as a rookie, she may even be making a mistake and some in her investigation. But she's actually uncovering a lot of things that may have taken Carter, you know, in his procedural ways to come up with. So, you know, even as a new agent, Deep Rose, I feel, has a big contribution to the investigation. And Carter, who is supposed to be training her, you know, maybe feels a little bit, sorry that he's maybe not spent enough training time with her, but they're sort of really thrown at this whirlwind of a case. So Deep Rose will be taking some chances. His wife, Jill Seacrest, who works in the lab as in forensics, will feel a need to take a very big chance in this book. So by the time it's over, these characters will definitely have been through the ringer. They'll definitely be changed. They will definitely have to come back and, you know, take an outlook on their lives and the stock of their profession, even of what they're doing as investigators after this one. It's really going to be sort of a life-changing event.
You're going to put the reader through the ringer too.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, in a good way. I mean, I hope that they'll, you know, latch on to these characters and, you know, and feel like, you know, that they know them. I mean, that for me as a reader, that's very intriguing. That really gets you into a book that has great characters along with the plot and, you know, has some intriguing dialogue going on. That's all a recipe, I think, for a great book. So as a reader myself, I'm always hoping, you know, I come across that book that has that. So, you know, when I come at it as a writer, I just always want to look at it as a reader, what they would want to see, you know, how the story would move along. You said, like you saw it kind of like a movie. I loved when people read it and sort of could see that visualization going on as if it was a movie going on in their heads. So that's all what inspires me to keep on writing these books.
So, ladies and gentlemen, the first book you need to go read is Murder by Association, and then Kindred Killers, and then wait on this third book. Now, Gary, believe it or not, our hour is almost up.
Okay.
Do you know how fast it goes when we get to talking? We just,
yeah.
Boom, it's gone. So real quick,
right.
Tell the folks where you can be found.
Okay. The easiest way really is to go right on Amazon and put in my name, Gary Starter, STARTA. Or you can just Google my name, Gary Starter. You get my website, www.garystarter.net. But basically, Amazon is really the most up-to-date place. You find every book I have out at present there. And you'll get, you know, all the little synopsis. So, you know, whatever, which one intrigues you, maybe you might want to pull that one off the virtual shelf, so to speak. I basically have them really specially priced, you know, with the reader in mind. So, you know, for a little money, you'll be getting full-length books, hopefully stories that take you on an adventure, and hopefully characters that make you, you know, think about them, maybe miss them when they're gone, maybe want to continue to read their series. So I just hope everybody, you know, pops over to Amazon and take a look at that.
And also, ladies and gentlemen, be prepared to stay up at night reading the books because you can't put them down. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I get so mad at myself because I fall asleep because I'm so tired with everything that I do that I can't finish, and I wake up in the middle of the night and my Kindle is in my lap and I'm going, what did I do now? And I've fallen asleep. So we're off tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen. On Monday night, I'm doing a special show with author Robbie Cox. He is coming back to visit us, and he's going to talk to us about the event in Cocoa. On Tuesday night, ladies and gentlemen, the band Cypher is coming back for a return tour on my show for 2 hours. If you missed them the first time around, shame on you. These boys are a rocking band out of Canada, and they are just, I love having them on the show. We will be playing their music and talking to them and seeing what they've been up to and where they're headed and see if they got any new music out there. So join us on Tuesday night. Wednesday night I'm taking off. They were supposed to come on Wednesday night, but they got a gig, so we reworked it. On Thursday night I have another two-hour show. The first hour is with musician and songwriter Sarah McAdam. She is also out of Canada. She is on from 8 to 9, and then from 9 to 10, author and my cousin Dana Davis will be on to tell us what she's been up to. Friday night, author Nick Carey. Saturday night, my friend and fellow radio host Chris Plain will be on. So next week, we are going to be full as a tick on a hound dog. So you don't want to miss these shows. If you miss them, they'll be in archives, but you really want to join us and listen to the shows. Gary, my friend, once again, you have made this hour fly by. You have hooked me on a book you don't even have out yet. You've continued to hook me on the book I'm reading. And for that, I thank you so, so much for spending an hour with me. It humbles me.
Well, I mean, you know, thank you very much for having me because, you know, to have my voice out there, especially, you know, be able to read from that excerpt and everything is really special every time I get a chance to do that and, you know, try to connect with more readers. So, you know, hopefully they'll take a chance, you know, getting into this Stanford Carter world.
You are definitely a regular on my show from now on, so I don't know what to tell you. You're just stuck with this.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Listen to you all, you know, that you have not just authors, but you have musicians and everything.
Well, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, I always close the show with this. If you were a dreamer, make your dream real. If your child is a dreamer, encourage your child, because no one can steal your dream without your permission. Make it happen. Be the master of your destiny. Because if you want to achieve greatness, then you have to stop asking. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. And how you leave others feeling after having an experience with you becomes your trademark. Remember that, ladies and gentlemen, and carry it with you, because we are all dreamers. We are what makes our civilization happen. Remember, Monday night, at 8 o'clock, right here, author Robbie Cox. Join us Tuesday night, 8 o'clock, the band Cypher. You will love them. They are fantastic. And, again, go and get Gary's books. You can go as soon as we get off here. Get his books and get ready for the third one because you don't want to miss out. Gary Starter. Go to Amazon as soon as we're out. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, until Monday night, I say good evening. Okay, Gary, thank you again so much, my friend. As soon as we get off of here and this gets up to archives, I'm going to post the link and tag you in it, then you use it wherever you want to use it.
All right, sweet.
And I'll also tag you when I put them up on the other podcast in the morning. And then you just send them out and pimp like crazy.
All right. Yep. Definitely. Thanks for helping me get the word out.
All right, darling. And what I'll do is, as soon as I get back to my desk, is a Saturday night good for you, or is there isn't booked yet? You tell me what night works for you.
Yep, Saturday nights are good.
Okay, then I'll put you on the first Saturday night in September. Well, I think the first Saturday night's around Labor Day. It's not around Labor Day. I'll book you. How does that sound?
All right, awesome.
And you'll have something else to read for us, won't you?
All right. Yes, I will.
All right. We'll see you then, my friend.
All right. Take care. Thanks for everything. Good night.
You're welcome, darling. Good night.
Bye. Bye.